When even my easy run became impossible, my buddies told me to go to VA. I don't know exactly what I was exposed to while I was serving, but I know that because of the PACT Act, I qualify for VA healthcare and disability benefits. I get treatment from top doctors trained in military exposures, and I get monthly tax-free disability compensation. With VA healthcare and benefits, I can keep going. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, April 11th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the new movie Warfare, and we'll present an interview with the film's two directors, Ray Mendoza and Alex Garland. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
And staff writers Jeremy Mathai.
Hey, folks. Thanks for having me.
And Bill Bria.
Greetings, Earthlings.
All right. So, guys, I have not seen Warfare yet. As we record this, we're recording a little bit early, but as people are listening to this, I'm traveling or I'm in Los Angeles already. But Jacob, I know you saw this movie. You wrote the review for Slash Film. So I want to start with you. What did you think about this film? And then we'll just have kind of a free-flowing conversation about it.
I mean, I think it's safe to say that really is unlike any war film I've ever seen before. I think to explain the reason that, you need to understand the origin of it, which is that Alex Garland, director of Annihilation and other films that you've probably seen and enjoyed, he was directing Civil War, and his military advisor on the set, Ray Mendoza, was impressing him. So he literally asked him, this is in the interview you hear later in this episode, he said, do you have any stories from your time as a soldier that would make a good movie, essentially? And the answer was yes, and it became this film. And their approach to creating this film was to essentially micromanage it. They say in the interview that there is not a single moment in this film, not a line of dialogue or a significant action that was not taken directly from an interview of somebody who was there. So maybe like it's like an incidental thing, like somebody scratching their nose or like changing their posture, you know, that's maybe not scripted. But everything else, if there's a moment in this film that is more than just a subtle moment, it was taken directly from the memories of people who were there. So the idea of this film is that there's no real story. There's no narrative. There's no character arc. It is, after the first few minutes, it becomes a real-time event where an extremely tedious mission in Iraq in 2006 essentially goes belly up and things go very badly very quickly. And it becomes confusing and chaotic, and there's no lessons learned, no speeches, nothing said about how you should feel. It's just a purely experiential and honestly quite experimental plunge into what it probably feels like to be stuck in a really bad firefight, and which means it's not a fun movie, and it's not rousing, and it avoids the common war movie problem of, hey, war is hell, but it also looks like fun, right? And Warfare makes war look so unfun that it's hard to... It's hard to even like imagine wanting to do this job after seeing this film. But Bill and Jeremy, I'm wondering, how did you guys feel about just the sheer non-handheldness of it? The fact that the film really does put you in the room, but doesn't give you guidance on it.
That's the thing I really loved about how Garland approached this movie. It's just the sense that it's dropping you in the middle of the action and leaving it kind of up to you to bring any of your feelings to it, your opinions on, you know, obviously the greater conflict at that time. But it's also just, you know, just there is no, like you said, there is no hand holding here going on. It's just presented as straightforwardly as possible. And there's no hero moments. You know, the cast kind of just, it has some big names in this cast, but they all just kind of disappear into their roles. Some soldiers are cowards. Some of them are just kind of, you know, trying to laser focus on the mission at hand and trying to survive the next 5 minutes. And other ones just freeze up in the middle of the action. And it's just kind of presented in such a way that you do genuinely feel like you're there with them surviving this just horrific onslaught. And everything else is just kind of left up to the viewer to go, okay, you know, make up your mind about this. Or, you know, as if anybody doesn't have their strong opinions at this point. But there's just something about the non-narrative aspect of Warfare that it feels like a great companion piece, maybe on the other end of the extreme, to Garland's own Civil War from last year. So I found that aspect just real. It made this such a more interesting experience than I thought it would be.
interestingly, I feel like this is a really great example of a fusion of its two directors in a way that you can bifurcate that you can't always, you know, when you have like the directed by the Coen brothers, directed by the Wachowskis or something like that, where, you know, they're perhaps their relatedness, you know, blends something into a cohesive whole more. Whereas this, it does feel like the Mendoza side of, you know, this is probably one of the most morally sound support the troops movies. If there is any propaganda, it is that, in terms of the respect that you must have for these people and their work. I say must have, you know, lightly. I don't mean that you must have it. I mean that the movie is telling you, you know, respect these people that went through this trauma and you know, serve the country, so on and so forth. So that's clearly in the movie. And I think if there is any, I agree with you guys completely 100%. This is not a preachy movie. This is not a propagandistic movie. If there is any content toward that, it is just, you know, these people are treated with respect, even though they're not made out to be all uniformly heroic or intelligent or, you know, morally incredible or whatever. Like there's flaws in all of them. And we're shown that repeatedly throughout the film. But yeah, this is definitely something where if you come away from it feeling any type of way of positivity towards, you know, warfare at all, it's because, oh, wow, I would hate to go through that experience. And, you know, God bless the people that managed to get through it, because it's obviously incredibly difficult. And then there's the Garland side, which really is, you know, it feels like an extension of his sort of career-long exploration of liminal space, you know, in the sense that he loves to do, you know, in his genre work, the science fiction and horror work, he'll explore obvious liminal spaces like Annihilation or even Men. And then Civil War was a great, I thought, exploration of, you know, what if, you know, American soil was a war zone, and you know, wouldn't that be strange to have these feelings and sights that we're so used to and so take for granted of, you know, my hometown, my home street, Main Street, being turned into a demilitarized zone. And, you know, Warfare does that for just the arena of war, where, you know, I love the first act of this movie, how absolute mundane it is, where it's very dull to the point, you know, where it's like people are just hanging around and finding something to amuse themselves with until things go south. And when they go south, it's just this unstoppable roller coaster of bad times.
Yeah, Jacob, what do you think about the contextualization of this movie as like on a timeline of Garland's filmography? Do you see the same through line that Bill mentioned there, or kind of like how do you rank this? Does this feel like of a piece with a lot of the stuff that he's made before, or does this feel like more of a one-off for him?
That's a good question, and I can see Bill's comparison. It's not one that I had directly thought of. I think Garland's career trajectory has gone from, I'd argue, more fantastical genre driven stuff to a bit more stripped down over the years. Even the jump from Annihilation to something like Men, which is still a genre horror movie, is a far more stripped down, you know, small chamber piece compared to, you know, some of his other stuff. And this, despite being a war movie, is set in essentially one location. It's a series of rooms where things go south. So it's it definitely has a lot of his trademark interests, like the attention to detail, that Soderbergh-esque obsession with how people do their jobs, which I think is evident in a lot of his films. But you can definitely tell that he has ceded a lot of creativity and control to Mendoza, because this doesn't always feel like a pure Oscar Island film. It feels like he is really there to make sure that Mendoza's story gets told. And as Bill and Jeremy both said, it is that's where I am most interested in discussing Warfare, because it's a film that's built to inspire discussion. If you're not leaving the theater like wanting to talk about this movie, I don't know what movie you just watched, because as they said, this is a film where we're asked to look at these American soldiers who in the opening 10 minutes seize the home of non-combatants, like literally take it over and put them in direct danger for the rest of the movie, and often make really poor, ugly decisions that are like should be examined as being like, hey, that's something that's not okay under any circumstance. But we're also allowed to acknowledge that they are heroic and tragic, and sometimes, you know, make huge mistakes and sometimes rise to the occasion. And we're asked to accept that all these things can be true. And I think that level of challenge is something I associate with Garland's best work.
I was going to ask about spoilers, but then again, this is the opening scene of the movie I wanted to talk about. So is that a spoiler? I don't know.
I think you can go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Just because I really did feel right from the jump the fusion that I was talking about between, you know, Mendoza and Garland, because the film opens with a scene of our, you know, our team, our crew, our unit, most of the main actors in the film, I think if not all of them, watching a music video on, I think, YouTube and just banging along to it because it's a great song. And it's that, you know, typical-ish kind of feeling of like, here's our heroes or our protagonists before things go south. And, you know, we're introduced to them in the moment of calm and levity and all that sort of thing, which you've seen in other war movies before, but it obviously gives us a sense of their camaraderie and, you know, that sort of idea. And I think that is, for me, the Mendoza side. The Garland side is the fact that he chose the Eric Pride song Call on Me, which was from 2004, and it has a very, it's the movie starts with the music video in a grainy YouTube-y sort of, you know, aspect ratio, but it instantly transported me to not only 2004, but that feeling of watching, you know, old style YouTube, which this video was a part of, and having that recollection of, you know, I was just out of college myself and, you know, just goofing around with friends at home and sending each other this video, be like, you see this video? It's so hot or so crazy. And instantly, as soon as we're taken out of that song, and it really does bang on the sound system, at least at the theater I saw it at. And then you're just cut to, you know, the streets of the town that they're in, and it's silent and everyone's very tense and it's very unsettling. And it's that feeling of going from a space of comfort and protection and, you know, and understanding where you are in the world to now, where am I, you know? And that fear that instantly dawned on me, I was like, oh, that I feel like I've been transported.
Mm-hmm. Transportation, guys. I just want to talk about another Garland touch that molds really well with Mendoza that I discussed earlier, and you'll hear some of this in the interview. The idea of every detail in the film being something that was collected from the people who lived through this. Mm. And there's a moment after a moment of significant violence in the film, a bunch of characters essentially come to, and there's this variety of images. You see from their POV, you see somebody looking up in the sky, and from POV, you see the electric wires, you know, going above the street above them. Another character looks down his legs and sees the state of his injury. And these shots are so specific and surreal that they feel so true. And they feel more real than most war films do, because there's a specificity to how Garland Mendoza shoot this, so that when you're watching it, you're not watching a thing that feels framed for maximum disposability or maximum ease of taking in the information, but framed for how somebody who is actually experiencing a trauma would view the sky or a corner or their legs after that. And it, if you like the sort of discombobulating sensations of annihilation, I think that plays through here, but in a more realistic lens. Jeremy, am I being crazy?
No, that is totally on point. And actually, I want to bring up that Garland has talked about how this movie is, you know, his approach to it was, him and Mendoza were basing this movie literally on memory. You know, they had interviews with the soldiers who were there. They talked to them, and they literally just, you know, set down the sequence of events based on their recollections of what actually happened. And sometimes their recollections were at odds with each other, and they kind of had to find a way to reconcile that somehow in the process of actually, you know, literally establishing the sequence of events and how each scene played into the next and what the details were that maybe were contradictory with someone else's memory of it, who were stationed at another part of the room when all this stuff was going down. And to go back to our earlier discussion of where this fits in Garland's filmography, just the fact that it's based on memory in that sort of such a specific way, it reminded me so much of his approach to Annihilation, which is based on a novel that he admitted he read years before, and he was so taken by it that when production came to, you know, he started production on Annihilation, he purposely chose not to reread the book. And he was just kind of going based on his kind of senses, his memories, his experiences, the feelings that he had while he was reading the book. And then he brought that to the script. So it's very, the final result is very loosely based on the book. It's from what I've heard, I haven't read the book myself, it's nothing like what actually goes down.
Oh, yeah. It's barely the same story,
right?
you can tell it feels like somebody dreamed of the book, and that's what the movie is.
Exactly. And it's that dreamlike feeling that I feel like he brought into Warfare as well, that it just makes it so much more visceral, so much more scary and intense in a way that I've honestly never seen in any other war movie that I've ever seen.
Yeah, this may be a minor spoiler, and I apologize if it is. If you guys feel it is, we can cut it out. But there's a sequence late in the movie where soldiers are repeatedly tripping over injured men and aggravating their injuries. And the other people looking after them start screaming at them, saying, "Stop tripping on the guy! Stop touching their legs!" And it happens like three or four times in a row. And you realize, if this was a movie that was trying to be cinematic, this would happen once. But clearly, in reality, this happened enough times that like people started freaking out over it, and you're starting. And it's a kind of detail that gets under your skin because it feels real in a way that these movies never feel real like that way.
Well, even something, an incident like that would maybe in another movie, a lesser movie, even be more cinematic of the accidental morphine stick, you know, of the guy trying to give his buddy the morphine and accidentally sticks himself with it. You know, in another movie, that would be an inciting incident for, okay, now this is going to lead to other problems down the road of now he's high, so he can't, you know, shoot this guy that's coming, or, you know, he's out of it, so he can't listen to a command that he's been given, you know, that sort of thing of like, oh, it's a setup for a payoff. And the payoff is really just the incident itself. It's just, you know, how insane the situation is that he accidentally just did this and they just lost this, you know, vital component of, you know, their unit to try and heal one of their wounded comrades, you know, and now they have to try and find another one, hope they have another one, that sort of thing. So even just that, you know, the way that that's handled is so unique in terms of how it isn't made into a bigger thing.
Ben, I was going to ask you, listening to us talk, as somebody who has not seen this, does this sound like something you are excited to see? Because it's a movie that it's hard for me to recommend it because it is so intense, upsetting, and doesn't have that traditional dramatic hook, but also feel like people who are like really are adventurous moviegoers really should see this. I'm curious how you're reacting to all of this.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it's formally daring, which I'm always down to see. I don't know, based on how you guys are talking about it, how normie audience members are going to react, but I feel like anybody who listens to this podcast and cares about movies will at least be intrigued. I'm certainly intrigued hearing you guys talk about it. The one question that I had for all three of you, and maybe we can use this as a way to start wrapping up this conversation, is like, what is this movie like just on the pure terms of it being an action movie? Like, Jacob, you were talking about it being a kind of an anti-war movie and giving you that feeling like you would never really want to just sign up and enlist after watching this. But just from a pure sort of thrilling action perspective, like, you guys watch a lot of action stuff. How does this movie stack up in that regard?
It's not an action film. It's never, I would argue that it's never once exciting. It is only scary.
Yeah,
agreed, 100%.
You never see the bullets hit the enemy. Like, there's never a point where, like, there's a bad guy there and they shoot him. It's not even clear if they ever even kill an enemy combatant in this film because you only see from their POV. There's a lot of blind fire. There's a lot of noise. The sound mix is loud and unpleasant to the point where, like, people, like, there are sequences that like, are drilled into my brain. They're just screaming and bullets going nonstop. There's no score. It is, the action is filmed to be as deliberately confusing, chaotic, and brutal as possible. I mean, like I said, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's not like a single heroic moment in this movie. There are acts of bravery, but there's no heroics. There's no heroics in it, I'd argue.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this is, again, an instance where a lesser group of filmmakers could have made a rousing, more generic genre version of this movie, because essentially the story is a siege story. It is a siege movie of, you know, we're surrounded, we're in one location, we've got to get out, you know, how can we figure a way out of this, you know, impossible situation? And, you know, it's more, I think the mundanity of the first act is carried through even the harrowing, you know, last two thirds of the movie, where, you know, it is just, I'm just reminded of, you know, Brad Pitt's line from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where it's like, nah, it's dumber than that. You know, it's just sort of like, it's just very down to earth as much as possible without either the heroics or the horror of, you know, something so out of bounds happening in reality. It does feel like it has a verisimilitude all the way through.
Okay, so I guess it's probably time to wrap this up. So, Jeremy, any closing thoughts on Warfare? Anything that we didn't talk about yet that you wanted to mention?
Speaking of, like, I guess the normie reaction to what this movie might end up being, I will offer a slightly dissenting opinion, at least on our podcast, that I did find myself struggling with, like, some of the non-narrative aspects of this movie. You know, you're used to watching a war movie, an action movie, and, okay, this thing in the first act is setting up something that's going to pay off down the line. There's consequences, and there's actions and consequences. There's all these narrative rules that you expect it to follow. And it's just not interested in that whatsoever. And that, I admit, that took me probably the majority of the first act to kind of wrap my mind around and go, okay, this is not what 100% what I was expecting it to be. And then accepting the movie on its own terms from that point forward. So I think there is kind of an adjustment that audiences are going to have to make, as long as they know that going in, and then just letting it kind of sweep you along for the, I don't want to call it a ride because there is absolutely nothing. Jacob was right. There is nothing fun about this movie. This is not a good time at the theaters. The sound design alone kind of makes it clear that you're really in for a really like an adrenaline pumping, heart pounding experience that is unlike anything else I've ever seen in you know, that I can remember. So yeah, that's kind of where I fell on it. It's Jacob mentioned this before too. It's you kind of appreciate it and admire it more than you'll probably end up liking it, which I think is an important kind of a kind of experience to add to your movie going diet. I think it's something new, it's something different, and I appreciate the attempt overall.
What about you, Bill? Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, just to piggyback off what Jeremy was saying, I agree. I think that there's going to be a general audience issue of maybe expecting a more traditional narrative or any really any narrative at all, because there's no question that this is 100% an experiential movie. And I think that our listeners, the people listening to this right now, will have to go see it or want to go see it just because they're typically interested in filmmaking and in films in general and the craft of it all. And that's what swept me away from the beginning. And so I was never, you know, taken out or had a problem with the idea that, oh, there's, you know, we're not getting real character beats here. We're not getting a real insight into the inner lives of these people or, you know, any really sort of narrative arc or anything like that, other than just the action or the, you know, literal action, not action movie, of people moving around from space to space and trying to get from here to there or from wherever they're going. And so I think that, yeah, it's, you know, it's a hard sell, like Jacob was saying too. But I do think it is bar none that I can think of one of the best examples cinematically of, okay, you want to know what being in war is like, you know, watch this.
All right, Jacob, bring us home.
Yeah. I wrote the review on slashfilm.com, so you can read my full thoughts there. Like Jeremy said, it's very easy to admire and hard to like. So it's one of those cases where I'm not in a rush to watch it again, but I'm really glad I saw it. And I just think that, you know, the crowd who made American Sniper a hit, who want a flag waving, support our troops, you know, jingoistic thing, are going to leave this furious. And the people who go to have a movie pat them on the head and say, yes, war is bad, American imperialism is bad, are also going to leave furious. This is a movie where those conversations are going to happen before and after the film. This movie just says, here's a thing that that happened, as much detail as possible, and go talk about it. And I really hope audiences will respond to that, because I don't need another war film to tell me war is bad. I know war is bad. I certainly need another war film to tell me that, hey, support the troops, because yes, I'm from a military family. I don't need to be reminded of that. So I'm really glad this film exists to actually say, hey, here's war. Is this worth it? Yes or no? And that's the question I hope people have when they leave this film, because that's the question I've been talking about with the people I saw it with.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah, I guess on that note, that sounds very much like Alex Garland, that kind of like button pushing, provocative kind of mentality that he often presents us with in his movies. So in that way, it seems very much like, yeah, this is in the lineage of other stuff that he's been doing. So, all right, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and get into Jacob's interview with Ray Mendoza and Alex Garland.
Movie's a hell of an experience. Like really never felt a war film like this before. So before we get into the details there, I really would like to talk about the conversation or the moment where you two realized in your previous working experience that, hey, there's a story here, we should work together. How'd that happen?
Start with them. Towards the end of Civil War, there's a sequence where some soldiers fight their way down a corridor towards the Oval Office. And the way Ray constructed the action in that sequence, and the behavior of the soldiers as they moved down, he had a particular tone to it, which was essentially a tone based on lived experience. Mm-hmm. And then in the way of cutting that, didn't use time compressions or the sorts of things we sort of almost instinctively do when cutting something together. Things move more quickly in film than they do in real life.
Right.
So we just, in the edit, kept it real time. As soon as I saw that, there was something really interesting that floated out, probably invisible to a lot of people watching, but it's just the kind of electricity of something slightly more documentary or truthful. So in post, I called Ray and I said, interested in making a film that would last an hour and a half or an hour 40 thereabouts and would attempt to be completely faithful to a true sequence of events, and we wouldn't distort them or compress them or change them. And the thing I often end up saying in a sort of illustrative way is, if for 5 minutes nobody did anything, they just sat there silently, that's what the camera would do. Mm-hmm. And is there a story that you would feel comfortable telling if we took that kind of approach? And it turned out there was a story Ray had wanted to tell for many, many years for all sorts of reasons, largely though personal reasons. And from that moment, I'd say about halfway through post-production on Civil War, we started trying to figure out how we would make this, how we would go about it.
So what was that like for you? Like, when we get that phone call, how did that feel to be approached about this project?
Well, once I felt honored, and I was like, oh, awesome. But yeah, I had to think about it for a bit. There's lots of stories that resonate through all branches of the military, especially a war as long as it was, 20 years or so. And yes, yeah, needed to figure out, like, one, like, there was a set of parameters of this window. He's like, hey, it's an hour and a half. We can't expand it. We can't compress it. Mm. We can only slide it. So with those parameters, you start to limit it, because, like, you know, some firefights last for days. And so then I knew of this story about Elliot, and I really had to ask myself, was I ready to kind of dive into the emotional components of the movie? Because I knew it was going to come out. So I called the guys that were there and that were involved in it, and I knew I was going to need them to speak about it. So I had a, you know, not a lot of phone calls. Yeah, there's some, like, you know, there's some trust components there. Mm-hmm. With Alex is, in the film world, sometimes, these stories can get hijacked.
Right? Yeah.
And so, if that was going to be the case, then that's, was a risk I was going to be willing to take. But in this case, you know, we had some history, and I really, you know, trusted Alex in that regard. And, I made the decision that it was time.
There are moments and images in this film that are so specific. Like one soldier who's wounded waking up and seeing that his leg's on fire. So much of, you've spoken past about this being a film based on memory. How many of those images were drawn from speaking to people who were there and realizing, yeah, I remember this very specific image?
So we were interviewing Joe, and he said, I'd sat up and looked down and my legs were on fire. So you know the Dogma movement?
Yes.
Yeah. So this was kind of like a Dogma film in a sense, except the Dogma rule was nobody is allowed to just invent something. Mm-hmm. And anything that makes its way into the film has to be, like, you can source it from mm-hmm. something, from a firsthand account. So that totally, it doesn't just limit, it sort of ends my involvement in mm-hmm. narrative, as it were. Same with the studio, same with the actors. An actor could not say, I feel motivated to get up and walk to the window, because if there is one of the people there saying you didn't walk to the window, you sat right there, well, that's the end of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So we did not invent. I don't want to bullshit about that. Mm-hmm. You will see things that are in a way inventions, like someone scratches the back of their head, mm. or the exact words used in a bit of dialogue in a dialogue exchange. So we know the dialogue exchange happened, but you can't be exactly sure the words arrived in this order, if you see what I mean. Right. So, but that's not, it's not exactly invention. It's more like as good as you can do under the circumstances mm. of an event that took place 20 years ago. And not the only, but the primary source of information being memory. There was actually some other sources, but it was mainly memory.
Was there a moment, a detail that was especially important to you where you said this was one that we're getting in here no matter what?
There is a lot. I mean, I try to hit it for each person. So, you know, when you talk to all the guys that were there, there's like their moment. Mm-hmm. Right? So, and I try to put all of those in there. For me, it was when post-IED and where DeFerro's pulling Cosmo. Mm-hmm. up the driveway. There was a few takes, but Elliot was there. I was there. And there was just one take. The sound, the way DeFerro was struggling, the light, how much smoke there was. Mm-hmm. It was perfect, as in too perfect. And it kind of open up this, you know, years of compartmentalization of these emotions and feelings that I was afraid was going to happen, and it did. So, yeah, that was a powerful moment for me. Therapeutic as well. You know, I think being there with Elliot, maybe it was maybe the only way that I could kind of deal with that because of its, how intense or how much that event like really changed my life, and not only physically, but just emotionally.
Yeah, the way the film uses sound effect to relay POV is really interesting because after the IED explosion, we have sounds are muted. And the moment we cut back to a larger scene where there's the ensemble again, we start hearing the screams. We start realizing that, you know, the sound lets us into the heads of individual characters. Can you talk about how you devised the sound mix working in post-production, how you made those choices?
Well, one thing I would say is that when you get memories, what you're getting is a subjective state. And so then we are given a very clear account of the subjective state. This is what it felt like to me. And so then the job is just how do you show that subjective state? And because you have several subjective states, then it creates a kind of patchwork within the film. And the way it would work is something like this. So Ray says, for example, he's remembering what happened and he's been in close proximity to an IED explosion. He's been knocked unconscious. He's suffering from concussion. And one of the things that's happening is he is kind of phasing in and out of states of awareness. So, okay, one can represent that by someone glazing out and sound disappearing. But not everybody is feeling that. So how do you cross cut? When do you cross cut? What is the different audio spaces that correctly represents this person or correctly represents that person? Who in the aftermath of the explosion has the tinnitus type sound? Who can hear nothing? Here's the example that I thought was best and clearest. And then what the film did was just explicitly try to reproduce exactly what was said. Ray was wearing headphones. The headphones were broadcasting radio chatter the entire time. But after the explosion, Ray was not aware of the sound of that radio chatter, but he could hear someone screaming. That's what his mind remembers in the moment. And so he goes out, he sees, ultimately he finds Elliot, he pulls Elliot back. As he's pulling Elliot back, he's being shot at. And suddenly, with an awareness of the surroundings, which is to do with the awareness of being shot at, the sound of the awareness, not the sound, but the awareness of the sound of what's coming in over the cans suddenly comes back into his brain and is part of the memory of this moment. So that's exactly what the film does. That's when the sound of the radio, the sort of cacophony sound of the radio, comes back in. So we just tried to repeat what we were told, whether it was from Ray or Joe or Elliot or any of the other people involved.
So I have members of my family in the military. I've not served, but one thing that those, like a family friend who was in Afghanistan says that being a soldier was deathly tedious and boring until it was terrifying. And I think this film kind of reflects it. Can you talk about how that statement feels to you?
Accurate, especially when you do it, every day for 6 or 12 months. Yeah, it's very much, it actually puts you more on edge. The quiet moments are more freaky than, just shoot at us already because we know what's going to happen.
Yeah. So one thing that really struck me is you discussed the memories and the approach of only creating sequences that are drawn from reality. But as an extension of that, there's never a moment where a character like looks at the camera and says, here's what, how you should be feeling. There's also never a moment where the film is trying to raise a flag. And, you know, I feel like there are people who are going to, there are some people who react to the movie saying, this is not the pro military movie I wanted. Some people say, this is not the anti-military movie I wanted. It's very much about, instead, it's a movie about being embedded with the military. Can you talk about, surely when making this, you knew you were going to get people who were going to...
Couldn't care less about that, to be honest. I think that the way I personally see it is this, is the film is a broad church. Books are a broad church, theatre, everything. It's all a broad church. you just need to accept that. Within that broad church, you could have a film about combat which is attempting to be as honest and faithful as possible. And I would have to say that honesty has to involve a kind of neutrality in the presentation of facts, I would argue. Or at least there is one pew within that church which is reserved for that. Then you can have someone else who presents facts because they have an agenda, and they can be someone else who decides, I'm not going to present any facts because that's my agenda. And so it goes on. This is just the space we choose to occupy with this film. The reason being that there is an inherent value in just trying to be as honest as you can about what war is like, and to listen to the experiences of people who have actually been at war, mm-hmm. just to simply listen to it and take it in, sort of take it into account. It's almost incumbent on us, I would say. Again, it doesn't have to be the whole picture. You can have another movie which is doing a whole other thing, but that's what this movie is trying to do.
Yeah, I think that the paraphrase, I think it was Truffaut who discussed
how difficult. Yeah, there's no such thing as an anti-war movie.
But I think this one comes close because
I got to say, I think Come and See is an anti-war movie, and I think Paths of Glory is an anti-war movie. I do understand the point. It's a legitimate point. He's talking about a general state, which is that film tends to romanticize and dramatize, which it does.
Yeah,
That's a perfectly reasonable. I think he was probably like, maybe he was being more glib than we sort of give him sort of credit for. Maybe glib's not the right word either, but just more sort of relaxed, making a general statement. There've been anti-war films before. I personally think it's hard to give an honest account of war that isn't anti-war, in as much as that it would say this is best avoided. Mm. It would simply be better if this didn't have to happen. Sometimes it does have to happen. There will be circumstances in history where it was unavoidable. Other circumstances in history where it would have been avoidable if people had been more honest about what it entailed.
Yeah, I think some of the details here that that really struck me is these are men acting under extraordinary circumstances. They're stressed, they're scared, there are moments of bravery, moments of retreat, and there are moments where they simply, the support isn't there. They have to fight for themselves. So the film is really just about, it's not anti-war. It's not pro-war. It's just here are the facts. Am I reading this correctly in your goal?
Exactly. I mean, obviously, I was trying to recreate this for Elliot, who doesn't remember. That was kind of like my driving goal and why I was so meticulous, or we were so meticulous on catching all the memories and really like, you know, how did you feel at this exact moment? When did you feel like you came out of this flight state of mind into the fight state of mind? And when did that happen? So all those, like, each, you know, they're micro arcs, but they do exist. And, you know, I think for the film, it's I don't just watch war films, right? There's a film I could name that you will be probably shocked that probably it's called Sliding Doors. Okay, that movie has resonated with me with any other movie ever. And so I go to movies if I want to laugh, if I want to cry, if I want to be inspired. It's an experience, right? Life's a series of moments. I don't remember every day of all my deployments. I only remember like significant ones. And this is a significant event in my life, and it's my experience, and I want to share that. And if you want to watch it and you want to experience something else, then I invite you to do that and learn something.
All right, that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about all the things that we mentioned on the show at slashfilm.com. I will link to Jacob's review of the movie in the show notes, so you can find it directly there. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
When it comes to fungicides, there's only one way to spell yield, N-E-O. Miravis Neo is the 2024 number one retailer recommended corn fungicide for a reason. It dominates spots, rots, blights, and stress to out-yield competitive brands like Veltima, and there's 6 years of university data to prove it. Ask your Syngenta retailer about using Miravis Neo for more yield more often. Based on 2024 Stratus Retailer Efficacy Study. Always read and follow label instructions.